I want to say, first of all, I'm actually very grateful to be here doing this. It's something I actually feel very, very strongly about. I do feel a little presumptuous being on the same panel as our esteemed Rebbetzins. My qualifications are a little less formal. So I belong to what my friends and I refer to as Club Sad. So this is a club no one wants to join. And when you get forced in, because you never join voluntarily, it's generally through illness or the death or some equally awful thing that happens to you or someone you know, chas v'shalom. Can I just preface everything I'm saying with chas v'shalom? If I say if and that, it's all chas v'shalom, but it's also this is life. The thing about being in Club Sad is, besides the really cool badges, is you can help other club members. You learn a few things along the way. And so when you learn these things, it's something I've discussed with other members of the club. Please don't ask me for an application form. It can be very, very important, very, very powerful that you can actually help going forward. So my story is, and why I'm in Club Sad to begin with, is in 2000, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she did the usual. She had the chemo and the surgery and the radiation, and everything looked great. You know, a year later, all was good. We went to Arizona and got spa treatments. It was great. And then a year after that, it was back. And that would have, or maybe, it was, yeah, that was September 2002. September 11th, 2002, actually, we found out. And July 2003, on July 10th, after ever-increasing bad news, my mother died. Her oncologist I spoke to, she said there's a bell curve, usually, of how people do. So on this side of the bell curve is people who do really well, and my mother was here. So that was, you know, that is what it is. And at the time, I wasn't yet from. I was definitely on my way. I wasn't eating cheeseburgers, but I might have a trade burger. You know, I was doing Shabbos mostly. You know, and I was on my way. It was stuff that I was thinking about. And one of the things that actually helped me end up as from person today is seeing how much Jewish law fit into my mindset after my mother died. This is not a halakha class, and this is certainly not a hashkafa class. But the way the Jewish laws of mourning work, b'kitzer, is everyone's heard of Shiva. The first 7 days after someone dies, you're in an intense grief period where you are supposed to grieve and people are supposed to be there with you. This is not a, hey, cheer up, it's going to be okay kind of time. It's a, I'm here kind of time. Then the first 30 days, then after the 7 days, you go to 30 days, and you've got more, like, you're allowed out of the house. But I think men don't shave, and I don't actually remember a lot of the specifics. It was a while ago. I should have phoned up before talking about this. And then if it's a parent, then you're in a velus for a year. And so you don't listen to music. So what we're doing now, Spirit HaOmer, you do for a year. You know, like, or till Lark Bomer. No counting. And what I found, you know, there's no parties, there's no music. It all fit how I felt. And I often say, like, if it wasn't for the Jewish laws of mourning and Shabbos and some unbelievable people in my life, I don't know how I would have stayed sane. I really don't. But that's just my plug for the Jewish laws of mourning. Of course, other people might find them as restrictive. And I also want to say I feel presumptuous in a way, because a lot of what I'm talking about is from my own personal experience, the experience of people I know, but there's a lot of people out there, and a lot of people react different ways. So if you had a different experience, it doesn't mean that I think mine was better and yours was worse. This is what I can offer. So one of the things that has always stuck out for me is how important the kindness of others was during, like, was really one of the really hideous time. The nurses at the hospital, the oncologist, the friends who checked in and backed me up. I had one friend, one of my dear friends, who I always call my moral role model in these situations. Like, a lot of times I'll do something nice, it's because I learned from her. I'm like, oh, Beth did that. What would Beth do? All right, I'm going to do that. She lined up our friends when she realized for me what was going on. She said, look, I'm going to need you guys to back me up because I got to back her up. So she had this whole team in place of, like, cascading responsibility because she knew I was going to need a ton. So people like that and people who do things like that for you, you'll remember it forever. And if you are the person who is, and I hate to use this word, but lucky enough to be able to do that for someone else, those can be the moments where you feel like you're earning your oxygen. Like, I did the right thing. I did what I'm here for. It's not easy, and it's not always appropriate for you to be that person. Very often it's not. When you can be, it's amazing. You know, like, that's one of my lists in my head, is the people who are on that list. So I kind of made it through everything without a network of people who were being kind. I was very, very lucky. Very lucky. I learned a million things, and a lot of it then and in the years following with different things with friends and this one and that one, about how you can actually support somebody or actually help take a little piece of that burden and make it lighter in the midst of something that's really just, it's terrible. Yes, Gamzu Latova, and you, that's one of the things about being Jewish, is you can and should acknowledge, oh my gosh, this is so hard, and also know, yeah, it's also for the good. But, oh, I said I wouldn't talk Hashkafa, sorry. this is my Hashkafa. I came to it on my own, and I would never presume to say to anybody that you should be holding there. Everyone needs to hold where they need to hold. So this isn't, the loss of my mother wasn't the only thing, unfortunately, my only kind of experience. So I've become known as the expert in my circles of friends and coworkers. I have a very good friend at work who calls me Dr. Death, but he means it completely affectionately. And when his brother got really sick, he called me. And yeah. So when something goes wrong around my friends, a lot of times they come to me for suggestions about how can they help. So that is one of the benefits of being in Club Sad, is I can actually help sometimes. Sometimes. So what I'm here to do is share some of my personal experience, what I've seen from people I know, this hard-won expertise. Rebbetzin Pavlov and I were talking and said, I don't know if I can be on this panel. I've got Rebbetzins, I have women from the community, like, they're in the business. She's like, I was like, I'm not an expert. And she's like, yes, you are the expert on this. And I was like, I'm an expert. I'm like, wait a minute. Expert. I don't want to be the expert in that. But I'm sharing this with you in the hopes that you will rarely, if ever, please God, need this. So one of the things that I wanted to try and explain is the mindset of somebody who's in grief or suffering. We're going to talk about some general principles about how to be helpful and some do's and don'ts. One of the most important things to recognize in the mindset is something that Rebbetzin Taven was alluding to when she talked about, like, the acute stages in a chronic illness with her son. It also applies to people with critically ill family members or friends or to someone who's lost what they've loved. They are in a different space than you. They are not in the same place you are. They may look normal. They probably look normal. They may even be talking normally. They may seem like they're functioning normally. But let me tell you something. Someone who is in grief, whether it's because someone just died or because someone died a year ago, or whether it's because someone's really sick and, oh my gosh, they're praying every day, but they also know that it's not so likely. Everything can happen, but you know also what is likely to happen. That person is in a different space. They're using an unbelievable amount of emotional energy, and they don't know it. Some people will, but I will promise you this is something I have seen. When you're in that kind of anxiety and that kind of headspace, the amount of emotional energy you are using to keep yourself from spiraling into crazy or spiraling into whatever, or just to get through the day and buy the groceries and make dinner, huge. Like, everything is way more effort. It can also be physically exhausting. So you might hear someone saying, I'm so tired. I don't know why. I'm not doing anything. I'm sleeping more. It is because, and this is true, I think, of almost any really high-stress situation, the amount of emotional energy you're using is sucking up all the oxygen in the room, and you don't even really realize it because you're so stuck in there, you can't see it. So try and be sensitive to that. If you know that someone is in this situation, give them the benefit of the doubt. Know that their judgment may not be perfect. They may not be thinking 100%. They may not be thinking clearly. It doesn't mean they're, like, incapable. It doesn't mean that they're this, like, shell of a person. But just know, like, this is a person whose head is so, I don't even have the right word, is so working hard on being where they need to be that there's not a lot of room for anything else. It's especially something that kind of becomes interesting at work. When you know, like, we had a colleague who had a sick child, though, born without an esophagus, which, let me tell you, I've learned, you don't want a kid born without an esophagus. There's a lot of surgery involved. It's not fun. And so he was still working, but he kept not producing, and we kept being like, oh, what is going on with Sean? And then I was like, what am I doing? I'm like, how are we expecting this guy to produce? He thinks he can produce, so we're listening to him when he says he can do it, but of course he can't. And we kind of talked amongst ourselves about, okay, well, how are we going to work around this? Because the job still has to get done. There is still a client paying a lot of money for us to get something done. But how would I want someone to handle for me? I would want them to try and cover. I would want them to make allowances. And things like, it's things like that that it'll be one of those where you're like, oh, why isn't she getting it any done? It was so simple. She's not getting it done because she thought she could get it done, and she had no, she didn't really realize it. So just try and think about how you might want someone to kind of work around you. These people. They're a lot of times can be reduced to the essentials of what's going on. There's a crazy clarity to that. Like when I was in the hospital with my mother, that was it. Job, work, whatever. Nothing else existed. This, we were in that moment. There is no headspace generally for other kinds of things. So they may, in real life, be really happy for you when this happens or that happens, but there is no headspace left because of where they are. Just take it into account. Please don't take it personally. They may really be focused on things that seem totally unimportant. Like, they may seem like crazy. I had a friend, and her mother was dying, and it was getting really ugly, and she was going to go up to visit. And it was around Pesach, and she had to clean a room in her house before she went, and her vacuum cleaner had broken. And I can't tell you, she was, I always call it gerbil wheeling, like the gerbil in the wheel, and it's going, and it's going, and she just kept talking about this vacuum, and I was like, how am I going to get a vacuum cleaner? How am I going to get a vacuum cleaner? Finally, I was like, here, I'm going to drive my vacuum cleaner over, you use it, we can take away the vacuum cleaner. It's not the vacuum cleaner. She wasn't really worried about the vacuum cleaner, but that's something nice and safe to be stressed out about. I don't have a vacuum cleaner. What am I going to do about that? Not, my mother is dying. What am I going to do about that? So people in these kinds of situations, just make allowances and just, oh, she wants to be stressed about the vacuum cleaner. If you can help with that particular stress, fine, but don't be surprised if now it's not the vacuum cleaner, it's the fridge. That's what that's going to be. They say also often, and this is something I saw with a friend of mine, people in hospitals a lot of times can get really specific about where things are in their room. So like, the water pitcher has to go right here. Right here. You move the water pitcher, no, it has to go right here. It's not because they're crazy, and it's not because they're control freak. It's because they've lost control. They're in a hospital. You're so helpless in a hospital. And your body is doing something, clearly, because otherwise you wouldn't be in the hospital, that you have no control over. So what? So it's not like it's a conscious thing. Well, I'm here and I'm sick and I can't fix it, so I think I will make sure the pitcher stays in the corner. It's just not, it's just how something like that manifests itself. So I'm just trying to give you like a little insight into what this mindset is, so that if you're dealing with someone who's like that, you kind of have a context for, maybe you'll remember, oh, that girl said, that girl, that woman said, that, I hate when I do that, I hate it. That woman said, oh, she might not be 100%, let me just try and take that into account. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to condescend and say to somebody, you're not quite yourself right now. It means being sensitive and thinking. So that's kind of the mindset. Some general principles, they're going to seem really obvious. I'm going to repeat them anyway. Be gentle. Be kind. Be kind. Be kind. Be kind. I can't tell you how important it was. The nurse in the radiation ward who smiled. The friend who said, how is it going? Like, I had a friend who bought me a present at a craft fair because she knew I was having a hard time. Like, I still use it. It's actually a challah board. I use it still. Be aware of your relationship to the person who is suffering. Someone you know in class and you talk to once in a while is probably not someone who you are going to, probably not, but might be. Might be. May not be the person who's going to spill to you. She is going to be probably pretty picky about who she wants to spill to. No, so you have to really be aware of what's appropriate. It's a dangerous thing to say because at the same time, sometimes you end up doing things for people who, because you can. There was a friend in our group who got very, very ill. I was able to do something. And I'm saying this not to brag, not to be like, oh, you know, where's my halo, etc. I was able to do something for her that was very good and it was very important. And the reason I was able to do it was because my friend Beth had done it for me. And I knew that Kelly was in this situation, and I was like, she can't be sitting there alone, so I will go over there. We had never been particularly close, but I knew enough that I was able to do it. So all of this we're saying is like, it's such a subtle balancing act. But it's just try and be aware of who the person is, what your relationship is, and if there's something you can do to help.
always try and think, rather than Simon was saying, think first what's coming out, and don't reduce the person to their tragedy, their suffering, their sorrows, their whatever it is. They're still the person. They're still them. They may just be trying to be normal today. They don't want to go into grief land. I can talk very well for a long period of time about my mother's death and illness if I stay at the surface. If I go beneath the surface, I can, 7 years later, I still can go right back there. I don't choose to do that most of the time because that's not how I live. So be aware, like, they may just want to be normal. Another thing, I've got sad news. You can't fix it. You can't. There isn't a thing you can do to fix it. Only Hashem can fix it. Only the person can deal with it. You may not even be able to make someone feel better. That's okay. Try, though. It's okay. But no, you can't fix this. Okay, so that's kind of the mindset, the general principles. We are running a little behind, so I'm going to try. Yep. Please. Exactly.
I might want to, you know, make you dinner, but I don't need to have dinner. I need you to drive my kid, you know, for the mm-hmm. to go, and that's going to be helpful for me.
Right, 100%. And that's the core of all of this is how can you help this particular person? And that's not always easy. It's not always easy to figure it out. It just isn't. You may not know them so well. I'm not particularly perceptive a lot of the time, so I'll walk into something. I'm like, oh darn, I should have done that. So it's having the true, pure kavana that you want to help, that almost always comes through, tempered with sensitivity and thought and trying to understand that person. So I'm going to give you a bunch of do's and don'ts. They're also on the handout. And I just want to say before I start these do's and don'ts so that you don't think that I'm like, oh, you know, I know all these things to do. And this is like my thing. For whatever reason, I like to talk about how people are dealing with suffering and how they should be handled. And I mess it up all the time because that instinct to try and fix it is so strong, and it is so hard to say, no, shut up, that's not helpful. That's to me. I wouldn't say that to you, Professor Sean. I remember I also once, I never, ever, ever ask anyone about babies. I don't ask them if they're pregnant, if their belly's out to here, unless they have told me they're pregnant. Like, never, 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 never. That's a general principle. I recommend it to everyone. I was talking with someone, it's a shotgun, actually, and her husband. I knew her for a while, but we were talking. We never really talked about personal life. And in the end, like, we're talking, I was like, oh, how many children do you have? And then they both paused, and I was like, oh, man. And I done, you know, there I'd gone. I had tapped into their pain. Because I violated my own rule. You know, I wasn't, chas v'shalom, of course I wasn't trying to do it. So what I'm telling you is, if you've recognized yourself in my list, or if you've recognized yourself on other lists, it happens to all of us. And all we can do is try not to, but we're all people, and we're all going to be chewing on shoe leather at some point. Okay, so I have a cardinal don't. Whenever anyone asks me, like, how can I help this happen, I say, you know the phrase at least, strike it from your vocabulary. Because any sentence that starts with at least is not helpful. Try it in your head. Got it? At least you had her for 30 years. Yeah, I wanted her for 50. At least, like, I'm not going to go through the examples. Just at least, bye-bye. Throw it out. It doesn't exist. Nothing helpful comes with at least. Don't point out the positive. That's not yours to do, and it's very presumptuous to try. Don't tell me, well, this, you know, at least, you know, see, you can't even do it without saying at least. The fact of the matter is, someone who's suffering is probably going to find a positive. You will be astounded, because they will be talking to you about something where you're like, oh my gosh, that happened to me, like, I'd curl up in a ball. I can point to positive things that happened to me because my mother died. I would trade them in a heartbeat to have my mother back, but I don't get to make that cheshbon. But if you were to say to me, my gosh, you know, you've become so much more empathetic since your mother died, that's great. I would be less empathetic at that moment. There would probably be vocabulary that Robinson Pavlov is trying to drive out of my vocabulary. Don't tell people that they have an opportunity for growth. No one wants to grow this way. No one. Don't say it. No musser. it's not your place to tell someone who's suffering that they should use this to strengthen their emunah. They should be aware that God rules the world. Yeah, this is all true. But it is not helpful, nor is it appropriate, to say to someone who is in the midst of intense pain, it is not your place. If someone says to you, how could a good God do this? Why could this happen? It's not your place to answer them. It's not. These are real questions. Chazal have been asking these questions for millennia. Why do bad things, hard things, happen to good people? We all know they happen. When you are the person in it, it doesn't help to have, it actually hurts to have someone tell you, well, maybe if you had more emunah, maybe if you davened more, maybe if you ran around that tree because it's a segula. Don't ignore the person. It's so hard to be around them. They're in so much pain, and you can't fix it. Don't ignore them. Acknowledge them. Call them. Brace yourself before you do. I have people that I don't talk to until I have the emotional energy because I know I can't, because that's where they're holding. Don't minimize anything. Don't try and tell them, well, at least it's not, this isn't, see, you can't say it without at least. This isn't so bad, or, well, the diagnosis isn't so terrible. Just let it be. Any way they feel is legitimate. Anyway, you'll have probably read there's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and she has these six stages of grief, and there's denial and acceptance and anger, and da-da-da-da. So you're like, okay, they should be feeling angry, or they should be feeling this. No. They're going to be feeling things that might even seem completely inappropriate to you. My father and I had a hysterical laughing fit in the hospital when we got some horrendous news. And it wasn't because we were happy. It was because that was how we were reacting. So, and something like, you shouldn't try and be happy, or, oh, you must feel terrible. No. In general, avoid you should. And this is way beyond this. In general, I'm saying, you should avoid you should. Be situationally aware. Someone suffering terrible grief or pain still has to be out in the world and be normal. If you're at work, this is maybe not the best time to be like, so how do you feel about your mother dying? Are you okay? I developed a stock phrase. Well, it is what it is. How are you doing? It was my way of saying, I'm acknowledging you asked the question. I am not answering this question. And we're going to change the topic now. I recommend it to everyone. It is what it is a great way of stopping a conversation you don't want to have. Don't expect an immediate acknowledgement or thank you. You may do something unbelievable for someone. Don't necessarily expect it then. My friend Stacy, who left me the voicemail, it took a long time. It was actually when I was preparing for this. I emailed her. I was like, I just thought you should know. I don't know if you remember. This is something you did for me 7 years ago. I'm telling it to a room full of people. You should just know this. But it took me like 7 years to tell her that. But I always remembered it. So don't expect acknowledgement. Here are some do's. Do tell someone you're thinking of them or davening for them if they will feel comforted by you saying you're davening for them. Be davening for them. I always forget to say that, daven. Judaism, if someone dies, Judaism has a great line for mourning. May you be comforted among the mourners in Zion. Say it, mean it. Be comfortable in silence. Allow the person to have your presence without the compulsive need to talk. This is something I've actually observed, and it makes me laugh because I have a sick sense of humor. Like, if you go to a shiva, you're really not supposed to talk unless the person who's in mourning is talking. But people can't do it. They can't sit in silence. And they will bring up going to the supermarket because they can't sit in silence because it's really, really hard. I know it. It's really hard. But try and be in silence if that's where the person needs to be. If you know someone's going through something, but you don't know what, you can offer support. You seem to be having a hard time. You don't need to tell me about it, but if I can do anything, let me know. Well, I have a long list. Let them talk. Ask questions gently. We covered. You could be a distraction. I'm really good at knowing what I need. It's a gift sometimes. So I was in the hospital one day, and things were, you know, my life was falling apart, and everything was horrible. And I just called a friend of mine. I was like, could you just talk about nothing for a while? Because I would just really like to talk about nothing. She's like, that's perfect. I'm on the other line with Jen, and they talked about, God only knows what. But I was able to just sit there and reconnect to a world outside the hospital. And that was a real gift that they gave me. Make specific offers of help and follow through. Not call if you need anything. No one's going to call. I'm going to give you that word. Very few people are aware enough or are going to be able to say, so-and-so said they would help. Let me call them and ask them. So reverse it. I'm making soup. I have extra soup. Would you like me to bring it by at 4 o'clock? Or I'm going to the store. Do you need anything? How about I pick up some fruits and vegetables? A lot of times these people are not making decisions. I know my decision-making capability was like shot. Peanut butter and jelly or cheese sandwich? I don't know. Just do. Ask if it's okay, but then just do. Make plans to offer to take them out for coffee or just to come over to their house for coffee. If you're in the dorms, Professor Solomon, or something like this, make Shabbos in plans, and then you do all the work. Hey, how about we do Shabbos in? I'll pick up X, Y, and Z. We'll just hang out. Or if you're going to go somewhere, you make all the phone calls. You can send things. You can send food, notes, emails, blankets. If you're far away, you can send a blanket. It's a hug. So what you can do, give them permission to be sad. So if someone is going through something hard, it's hard. It's okay. And a lot of times they're going to apologize to you. God, I'm such a downer. I'm sorry. You don't want to hear it. It's all right. This is hard. You should be sad. Well, that was you should, but okay, that was an appropriate reason you should.
It's okay to be sad.
It's okay to be sad. Let them know that it's okay to acknowledge it. I've found a lot of times with people, they're just being told, oh, be happy, look for the bright side, look for... And I said to a friend of mine once, who was having several things going on with his wife, and this and that, and he was just like, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm like, well, this sounds awful. You're going through all these things. And he's just like, thank you for acknowledging that this is hard. Recognize when someone's evasive and doesn't want to talk and respect it. Even after the immediate aftermath, check in on somebody. After Shiva, the world goes on. But the person who lost somebody, they still lost somebody. Well, the rest of their life, they lost somebody. But the first year, especially, is hard. I've actually put a note in my Outlook calendar at work. And depending on the relationship with the person, once a week or once a month, it'll be check on Joanne. Check on Joanne. Check on Joanne. So I'll send an email or I'll send a whatever. It takes maybe 40 seconds, maybe a couple minutes. It means a lot when someone else remembers that I've moved on, but you're probably still sad. Ask the person about the person who's sick or died. It's hard. Most people avoid it. Oh, they're not going to want to talk about it. It's the opposite is true. When someone you love that, for the most part, give them the opportunity. For me, I love to talk about my mother. I loved when people asked me. I love when people told me stories because it helped keep her here. And I know a lot of people who have been very grateful. It's also hard to hear. You may also ask about someone who's sick, and they may tell you something that's negative. They may complain about it. It may be something they're struggling with. They had a terrible relationship with so-and-so, and now they're dying, and they don't know what to do because they still don't like him. Just because someone's sick or dead doesn't make them a saint. But guess what? Not your job to volunteer that. You can listen. Question?
How do you ask something like that? Because you can't be like, you know, like, what do you miss
about your mom? Tell me about your mom. How'd your mom and dad meet? Or ask, you know what's a good one? Ask to see a picture. Do you have a picture of your mom? Do you have a picture of your dad? Because then they can show it to you, and then they can start talking. Or maybe they don't want to. But yeah, you're right. So, tell me about the person you lost. Yeah. But it's especially at Shiva and the immediate mourning, it's a very easy thing to say. So tell me about her. Tell me, tell me a story or whatever. That would be my recommendation. That's the do's and the don'ts. I just want to take 5 quick minutes. We're totally running over. I apologize. I'm going to cut the closing down to like 3 minutes. But this is something I think is important. This is my advice. Or do's and don'ts, I don't even know what the right word is, for if you are the person. Because you also have an obligation, if you are the person who's suffering, to yourself. You have an obligation to yourself. You know, you've got all these other obligations. Now here's a new one. But I'm just going to tell you this, and a lot of this is just permission. If you can, take care of yourself physically. You may not have time. You may be listening to an oxygen monitor beat all night, and guess what? You can't sleep. But don't. If you can, focus on sleeping, eating nutritional things, and finding things that distract and comfort you. Because that is your job, if you can do it, is to take care of yourself. Give yourself a break. Lower your expectations. I always remember something Robertson Taven said in the class. Sometimes Hashem just wants you to hold on. Now may not be the time to take upon yourself a new mitzvah or a higher level of this mitzvah. now may be the time to hang on, and it's okay. Guess what? At some point, you'll be doing that again, but this might be just the time to hold on. Know that it's okay to be sad. Know that it's okay to be suffering. It's not fun. No one likes it. It's okay to think, this stinks. Why me? Why is this happening to me? It's not a lack of faith to acknowledge that something is difficult. Conversely, don't beat yourself up if you're having a good time. That's okay too. Choose to be around people that make you feel safe and relaxed. Just because someone thinks that they can help you doesn't mean they can. You pick it. And don't feel guilty if you blow things off. I am giving you permission and hospitality. You should never need it. Do the best you can to identify the essentials, and everything else is negotiable, and you can deal with it later. I promise you, you can deal with it later. It'll get done. Just find the essentials. Learn your own deflection phrase. You might have something nicer than it is what it is, because people get a little, okay. I think on the handout we have a bunch of selections. If someone offers concrete help that you would like, take them up on it. They will be thrilled to death, because everyone feels so helpless. Like I always tell people, no, really, accept it. They are going to be so thrilled that they can do something, that you're actually helping them. You will not be a burden. And if they say it and they didn't mean it, well, that's too bad on them. Now they're doing a mitzvah. And my last thing is know that well-intentioned people who have the best hearts are going to say incredibly insensitive and stupid things to you. And they mean it from the best place, but they're going to say something stupid. If you can, try and see the humor in it. If not, just try and remember, this is what people do. Try and let it go, and then you have to tell me, because I keep a list.